Senator Jordan did not mention the Iceland attack to the bride and groom while they were in the restaurant. He knew they would hear about it all too shortly. Before the stories and pictures announcing Raymond's return and their wedding could appear in the morning editions, friends, agents, and sympathizers had passed the word along through channels to the Soviet Security Command. The command issued its wishes to Mrs. Iceland in Washington, and she reached Raymond by telephone the next morning. She chided him gently for not having told her of his great happiness, and was so gently convincing in her most gentle hurt that Raymond was surprised to realize that he felt he had behaved somewhat badly toward her. She told him that the Vice President and the Speaker of the House were coming to the Iceland residence at 3 o'clock that afternoon for an unusual policy meeting relative to civil rights, and that since they had decided it would be advantageous to allow the story to leak to the public, she had immediately put in a bid for her syndicated son, and everyone had concurred on the choice. Therefore, he would need to catch a plane immediately for Washington so that they could lunch together and she could fill him in on the entire background of the meeting and the plans. Raymond readily agreed. Josie was a girl who had mastered every expertise on sleeping. He didn't waken her. He left a note explaining why he had to leave and saying he would write the piece itself in Washington that night and would be back at her doorstep before she woke up the next morning. Raymond learned about Johnny's fantastic attack on his father-in-law from a newspaper during the flight to Washington, and he began to feel the numbness of great rage and the purest kind of joy. The substance of the attack released in him something he had always wanted to do, but had always inhibited to the point where he had never recognized it before. He would go to the Iceland house, and he would lock Johnny in a room, and he would beat him and beat him and beat him. Another great light broke over his head. He would shave his mother bald. Josie learned about the attack at breakfast from the same morning newspaper in the story under the front page three-column picture of herself, her husband, and her father. The references to the Iceland charges were bewildering to her. She had lived so long in the Argentine that she had not developed a native callousness to any allegation made by Johnny. She dressed at once, telephoned her father, told him she would be right there, and hurried out of the house, taking an overnight bag with her, and leaving a note for Raymond explaining briefly, and asking him to come to her father's house as soon as he could the following morning. She signed the note, "With all my love forever," and propped it up for his attention on the foyer telephone. Colonel Marco, that constant brooder over the marriage state, deferred too long in his plan to awaken, disturb the newlyweds. When he went to Raymond's apartment with his force cards to sweep the destructions out of Raymond's mind, Raymond and Josie had both gone. No one answered the doorbell to give him information as to where they had gone. Chun Jin could see the caller by opening the service door just a crack, 15 yards along the hall to Marco's right. Raymond's mother gave Raymond no chance to put his vengeance into effect when he reached her house in Washington. As he charged wildly into her office on the second floor, the office was decorated like the inside of a coffin. She suggested that he pass the time by playing a little solitaire, which cut him off in mid-curse. She locked the door. The Queen of Diamonds showed as the 14th card in the first layout. Raymond listened with absorption to what his mother had to say. She questioned him, and he gave her a detailed report on how and why and when he had disappeared from the house on Long Island. And she was so relieved that she laughed hysterically as he told her about Josie's costume and his total eternal obedience to the Queen of Diamonds. When she had dried the tears of nervous joy from her eyes and had fired four more short bursts of hysterical laughter, she got down to business and laid out his job of work. She had been ordered to make a full test of his reflex mechanism, and because Senator Jordan was potentially so dangerous to Johnny and her terminal plans, she had selected him for execution. She set down her orders to Raymond with clarity and economy. It was now 11:22 a.m. Raymond was to go to the Washington Bureau of the Daily Press and talk about convention coverage problems with the bureau chief so that his presence in the city would be established. He would then have lunch at the press club and talk to as many acquaintances at the bar as possible. Raymond reported stolidly that he did not have acquaintances. His mother said he knew Washington newspapermen, didn't he? He said he did. She said, "Well, you can just stand next to them and talk to them, and it will be such a shock that they'll place you in Washington this weekend for many years to come." After lunch, he would appear on the hill and find an excuse to visit with the speaker. At 5 o'clock, he would stop by at the press room at the White House and annoy Hagerty by pushing for a breakfast date the following morning at 7 o'clock. Hagerty would not be able to accept, even if he could stand the idea of breakfasting with Raymond, because of the convention opening in New York Monday morning. But Raymond's insistence would be sure to rile Hagerty, and he would remember Raymond as having been in Washington on Saturday and on Sunday. At 6:15, he would return to the press club bar for 45 minutes of startling conviviality. Then he would return to the Iceland House to have dinner with friends. It would be an entirely informal dinner, but with quite good people like Mr. Justice Calder and the Treasury Undersecretary and that young, what's-his-name, criminal lawyer and his darling wife. At 11:45, a television repair truck would be at the back entrance to the house with his own man, Chun Jin, driving. Raymond would get into the back of the panel truck, where there would be a mattress. He was to sleep all the way to New York. Did he understand that? Yes, Mother. Chun Jin would give him a revolver with a silencer when they got into the city, and would let him out of the truck in front of the Jordan House on East 63rd Street at approximately 3:45 a.m. Chun Jin would give him the keys to the front door and the inside door. Raymond went over a diagram of the inside of the house while his mother explained precisely how he was to find the senator's sleeping room on the second floor, after having first checked the library downstairs in the event the senator had been bothered with one of his intermittent spells of insomnia. It would all be quite as easy as the liquidation of Mr. Gaines had been, but he was to take no chances, and it was essential that he take every precaution against being identified. And she did not need to specify the precautions, she was sure, beyond that. After the assignment had been completed, he was to return to the back of the truck and go to sleep at once. He would awaken at Chun Jin's touch when they had reached the back door of this house again. He was to go to his room, undress, put on pajamas, and immediately go to sleep until he was called. And, of course, he was to remember nothing. Not that he would ever be able to in any event.